Ms. City Manager? Are we doing okay or? Okay, I think that clock's a little slow, so we're at 6, so I'm going to get started. All right, we're going to call the regular session of the City Council of Atascadero to order, and we have the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilmember Funk.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Here.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Burbo?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Wonderful. And ask for an approval of the agenda.
Also move.
Second.
We have a first by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Fonzie. And Laura, do you need to read the waiving of?
No, we're all good on that.
All right. Roll call, please.
Sorry. Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
And Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am. All right, motion passes. Next is the consent calendar, and items on the consent calendar are considered to be routine and non-controversial by city staff, and they tend to be approved in one motion unless there's somebody from the council wishing to pull or have further discussion or someone from the public. So I will first ask, is there anyone from the council wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, anyone from the public? Seeing no one approach, I will ask for a motion.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
First by Councilmember Fonzie, second by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
And now updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. The first item I want to talk about tonight is our fourth annual Tamale Festival, which was this last Saturday. It was held here throughout the downtown and was a huge success. Hopefully everybody made it out to the Tamale Festival. We don't have any final numbers in it yet, but we do know that the attendance was way up again year over year. We had over 30 tamale vendors who traveled in from all over the state, along with another 50 non-tamale food and beverage vendors, plus a lot of great music and entertainment, and the crowd that was here was enjoying it all. It was huge. It was a fantastic success. Lots of crowds, but there were plenty of tamale vendors, and a lot of the tamale vendors had very short lines or no lines at all. Worked out fantastic. So this event keeps growing by leaps and bounds. Everybody wants to know what the results were from the tamale judging contest and the who had the best tamales. So Garcia's Restaurants from right here in Atascadero took first place in both the People's Choice Award and the Judge's Choice Award for traditional tamales. For gourmet tamales, the first place was taken by La Luz del Mundo out of Ontario. I had one of their tamales by happen chance, and it was really good. I missed out on Garcia's, though, so next year, or actually I can go down and have one, so that's fantastic. And the sweet tamale was taken by La Luz del Mundo out of Santa Ana. All of them were really good. I think the mayor, that was one of her favorite tamales, was the sweet from there. So if you missed a tamale festival for this year, don't worry. Get it on your calendar for 2020. We're going to have it again. And it's going to be as fantastic as it was this year. I think people really enjoyed the entertainment from the dancing horses and the folklorica dances, dancers to we had the Dork Band and Los Gatos Locos Band. Along with the Chihuahua contest, it was a lot of fun. And we had beautiful weather, so that's always nice, too. Want to give an update on La Plaza project. It's now underway. And so as everyone who's driven along El Camino Real through the downtown recently can see, Demolition is well underway for this project, long-awaited project. The former Jack in the Box and Sally's Beauty Salon buildings have been removed, and the Malibu Brew building will also be demolished soon. The Malibu Brew structure itself, which is a former service station, will be relocated outside of the city, and the owner of Malibu Brew is working on his new location, which will be next to Century 21 and is expected to be ready in the next few weeks. I think there was a nice article in the paper this week about their moving. I also have more good news. The lake pipeline is flowing. So each rainy season, when a Atascadero Rake is flowing at sufficient rate to allow it, we divert some of the water flow from the creek into the lake via our lake fill pipeline to help supplement the lake's water level and to improve the lake's water quality. We're very happy to report that the pipeline is now open. A member of our public works staff was able to open the valves on Sunday morning. The creek's been flowing at a high enough rate for the last 10 to 12 days or so, but we had delayed opening the valves. We were keeping a close eye on the weather forecast. We knew that several good storms were on their way, and significant rainfall during short periods along with rapid water flow and turbulence in the creek can turn up the creek bed and really muddy the water. So we didn't want to get that mud in the pipeline and into the lake, causing diminished flow and diminished lake water quality. So we were able to open it and get things going, so we're excited. We continue to monitor those lake valves and keep a close eye to make sure that we get the water in there. And I want to talk about another fun event, and it's the Father-Daughter Sweetheart Dance. So if you're thinking about attending this very popular event, you should plan to buy your tickets now. There are two evenings in February for dads to choose from, either February 1st from 6:30 to 9:30. We tend to try, and that's better for younger girls, say 12 and under. And then on February 2nd from 7 to 10, which is perfect for the little bit older girls, say ages 12 and above. But guests are welcome to purchase tickets for either night. They're just geared a little bit differently, but it's whatever works best for you and your significant daughter and or other young girl in your life. Tickets for this event are available at the Colony Park Community Center on Traffic Way between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and tickets will not be sold at the door. So please get your tickets now. February 1st and 2nd are coming up quick. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that council may have.
Any questions? All right. Thank you, Ms. City Manager. We'll now move on to community forum. This is the portion of the meeting that is reserved for persons wishing to address the council on matters that are not on this agenda but over which the council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and know that we've turned on the sound timer to assist speakers in knowing when their time is up. Please state your name for the record before making your presentation. And know that comments made during community forum will not be a subject of discussion. A maximum of 30 minutes will be allowed for the community forum unless changed by council. And any members of the public who have questions or need information may contact the city clerk's office between 8 a.m. or 8:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. at 805-470-3400 or at cityclerk@atascadero.org. Welcome, first speaker.
Good evening. My name is Richard Mullen. I live on Portola Road in Atascadero, and I'm going to talk about two roads that I use frequently and that I think are in dire need of repair. Not the entire road, but the interchange on San Anselmo between El Camino and In-N-Out Burger. There was a big hole in it the other day that took about almost 2 days to get it filled up, but finally Saturday afternoon someone came in and threw some patch in there. But that whole intersection on both sides, the road is tore up. I realize this probably is a Caltrans problem, but if the city could do anything to repair those, the both sides of the road, the one on the El Camino side and the one on the other side, the In-N-Out Burger side, it would be really nice to have those fixed. The other road is, we'll begin with Traffic Way. I don't know if any of you have ever had a car washed and then all of a sudden a bird has decided to fly over. If you walk under Traffic Way towards El Camino, there's nothing but pigeons there, and they're primarily leaving. I realize this is probably a Caltrans issue, but couldn't there be some netting or something put up that the city could encourage Caltrans to take to discourage the birds from roosting underneath there and clean up that area, since that's the heart of downtown Atascadero, people. People getting off, they're looking at the roads and the sidewalk, the one sidewalk that goes to nowhere and the other sidewalk that goes to someplace else. But that needs to be taken care of. And the last road I'll talk about is Santa Lucia up to Portola Road. We've spent a lot of money on paving streets and repairing streets that obviously cars go on, but few cars, not a major interchange or a major thoroughfare. But once again, that's a major road in Atascadero. I spoke about this some time ago, and I'm bringing it up again. I think that that road could be definitely moved up for some sort of resurfacing between the Catholic Church and Portola. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
Good evening and Happy New Year. This is Lee Perkins, Atascadero, and I have a question for clarification. I have the strategic planning workshop agenda in front of me, and as I look at it, I don't find it to be public input friendly. And I also wonder if it's being taped like the city council meetings are. Perhaps I misunderstand the purpose of the strategic planning workshop, so I am wondering, is this a city council meeting for council members to work on plans for the next 2 years for the city, or is a public comment encouraged, and to what extent? The mayor's statement, or the statement that's on the agenda, reads, at the discretion of the mayor and as time permits, public comment will be open during the discussion of the above topics. I interpret this as giving low priority to public comment. What if someone wants to talk on a topic that's not on the agenda? What happens? And then in an ideal setting, I would suggest a community forum, as you have in the beginning of the city council meeting before the strategic planning, so that it will allow the public to express issues of importance to them and then perhaps have an answer from the city council if that wants to be blended into the Friday or Saturday agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Any other speakers? Seeing none, I will close public comment and bring it back to the council or to staff. We do have roads on the agenda, sort of our road report, and I'm wondering if our public works director, maybe under roads, we could address a little bit of those comments, kind of wrap that in, if that works for you. And with regards to strategic planning, yes, there absolutely is public comment. We will even be having breakout sessions where all of us will be getting together on day two. There will be public, council, staff. There will be much public input throughout. The reason for not putting like specific here and there, you could get to a place where it doesn't make sense or a place where it doesn't make sense and we didn't schedule it. So there is no, we have no intention of leaving the public out. We want your input. This is all of us together. This is our community. We're in this together. So we want you involved, and I think we're going to have a really good time doing it. And I know not all of you can make it. No, it is not taped. That would be quite expensive. But we do want you involved, and to the extent that you can be here, even for a little bit, we welcome you. So thank you. All right. We have no public hearings tonight. We'll go on to management reports, and this is our 2018 annual road report, and this will be by our public works director, Nick DeBar.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno. Before I get going, maybe I'll just address the Mr. Mullins' questions about those roads.
Sure thing.
As Luke's loading the PowerPoint up. San Anselmo, between El Camino and In-N-Out Burger, that's actually on our capital improvement program. I'm happy to report we're going to start design some soil borings and geotech evals this year. And then next year, we hope to have that reconstructed. And I saw that pothole, too. I actually called that one of my guys on Saturday and had him come in and fill that as well. I saw that one as well. Traffic way, the pigeons, we're aware of that. We've actually consulted with somebody that can trap them and has done work here. So we're actually looking at that. We've talked to Caltrans also about netting and some other things, but so far no avail on that. But we're kind of working on a plan right now, not just underneath that bridge, but downtown with the pigeons. And then the Santa Lucia. Boy, you had three really good topics because they're all good news from me. We're in design right now, and that's going to be constructed this summer. So all three of those roads, I didn't even pay him to come here either. So. So tonight this is about the F-14 annual report. This is something that both Administrative Services Director Rangel and I work on. Mostly is Director Rangel's report. Not sure why this isn't advancing. Oop, there we go. All right. So this is all goes back to the voters in November 2014 approved a half a cent sales tax measure. That's F-14. E-14 was actually a complementary measure as well that said, should the proceeds from F-14 be used to repair roads? And that also got approved. So as we've kind of discussed before, we try to focus on the neighborhood roads. So not the functional classification of arterial, but more the collectors and the residential. These are roads that people live on that they primarily use to get to the arterials. And the thought process was that, you know, these are roads that, you know, the city, you know, tended to struggle with fixing. We always use money that we did have on the arterials, but we tried to focus on the neighborhood roads. Also established a citizen sales tax oversight committee to review annual expenditures, and the annual road report does include both financial statements and revenue and expenditure information. So begin on April 1st, 2015. This past year, reporting period was July 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2018. The revenue collected was a little over $2.3 million, so this is above what we had anticipated. And interest income was about $554. Expenditures by project. So a lot of times these projects, especially the fact that the reporting period is in the middle of construction season, they typically overlap 2 years, fiscal year. So these are the projects that had money expended during that period. The 2016 pavement rehab project was one that we were wrapping up. And then the 2017 projects were primarily construction. Those also went into this fiscal year also. And then we started these other 2018 and 2019 projects as well. So the 2018 project we're just wrapping up right now. That's like Rosario and some of these roads in the north end of town. 2019 is going to be more of the west side of town. Total expenditures, $1.684 million. And I mentioned there's also those other expenditures that came after this, so there's always a running balance with the cash flow. So at the end of the year, just under $3 million were in the balance. Again, a lot of this was already committed and just was spent after that end of the reporting period. So I just want to kind of go through some before and after pictures on the main project we did. This seems like a long time ago, but actually it was during that reporting period last year. Carmelita Road, a little before and after. El Cantera Road, which is kind of behind the 76 station back over there. Cortez, which is out off Kerberell, back behind Pine Mountain. Monterey Road, this was north of San Anselmo, and it ended at El Campo. We're actually going to be working on the other section north of this for a project this summer. That's in the part of the 2019. And then we also have this community road report that we typically send out to all the residents in town. Just a brochure. I think you guys all got one of these. But it kind of summarizes our program, lets people know what's coming up next year. This year we actually added some additional information on the project summary, the before and after pavement condition index, and some of those items. And this will be mailed to everybody in town through general funds, and it's estimated to be up to $3,500. The Citizen Sales Tax Oversight Committee met on January 7th this year. The actual road report was done sooner, but due to some members' availability, we met in early January. Three of the members are here tonight, sitting in the front row here. Committee member Simonen and Shaw and Burgess. So the recommendation from the committee as well as staff is to approve the 2018 annual road report as well as a 2018 community road report brochure. And the committee members may or may not want to say something. I might add that committee member Simonen has been on the since the inception of the committee, and she's her term is up and she's going to retire from it. So I just want to thank her as well and the other committee members that have committed their time to this. So with that, I can take any questions, or Director Rangel can as well.
Thank you, Nick. And thank you to the three of you who have served on this committee. We really appreciate you and your time and really safeguarding how we're spending public funds, and you're being that watchdog for our community. So thank you. And when I open up public comment, if you would like to speak, then we'd love to have you do so. So we'll go to questions to begin with, starting with Council Member Fonzie.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could clarify for the public, what's the difference between rehabilitating pavement and resurfacing pavement?
Resurfacing pavement is more of a maintenance. We don't call it maintenance because it's not really the maintenance that the public works crew does. It's more of a surface treatment, and it's really meant for the better conditioned pavements that don't need to have work done for the structure. A structural component. Rehab kind of addresses more of a structural deficiency in the pavement. So resurfacing or maintenance would be a slurry seal, crack sealing, chip seal or seal coat, where rehab could be anything from an overlay, mill and overlay, full depth reclamation, anything like that.
So in other words, the rehabilitation is more major.
It's more major. It's a lot more costly as well.
Thank you.
I see no other questions at the moment. I will go ahead and open it up for public comment. And if any or all of our three members would like to address us in the public, we'd love to hear from you. Great.
Hi, I'm Mike Shaw from Atascadero, and I would like a member of the CTOC committee, and I'd like to compliment Director Barr and his staff for doing an incredible job and a very transparent job. But let's don't fool ourselves. This program he's got is only slowing the rate of the deterioration of the roads in Atascadero. When you're considering priorities for the city at your meeting Friday and Saturday, please put infrastructure on it. We need more money to spend on the roads. We've got quite an investment in roads, and they're continuing to deteriorate. Thank you.
Thank you. And any other member from the public wishing to speak on this item? All right. Seeing none, I will bring it back to council. And Mr. Shaw, we certainly do not disagree with you. Thank you. Any questions, comments, or a motion?
Am I up? Yes. Actually, I had a comment that leads to a question. You know, at our last meeting under community forum, we had some gentlemen come and ask about a particular road, Aurora, which you then explained was a non-city maintained road. And I think we're somewhat unusual as a city that we have 139 miles of city maintained roads, but we have 30 miles of non-city maintained roads. And I know as a council member, and I would believe as Public Works, those are a lot of the roads you get questions about, you know, because some of them are really bad. And I'm just wondering, despite the limited space in here in the discussion about roads, if we should point out there, you know, that we do have a large number of non-city maintained roads in Atascadero. So that it's just one more avenue of getting it out there to folks. I realize that we have it on our website, if I'm not mistaken, and we list that. But I think that's just a common misperception, so folks naturally ask about, you know, some of the really bad roads that it turns out are non-city maintained, and whether that might be useful to squeeze in a sentence on the roads page of this little brochure.
We can certainly, we actually talked about that too, and it's as much as we want to get out, I mean, it's so limited on this brochure. We actually looked at doing this is a 6-panel. We actually looked at doing an 8-panel with if you open it up, with a legal size, and decided just to go ahead with this one. But next year we may pursue like an 8-panel brochure just to get a little more information out there. We can certainly try to squeeze that in on the Atascadero roads, and maybe after maybe that first sentence, you know, put in there, you know, including an additional 30 miles that are not maintained by the city or something like that, if the council wishes that.
Thank you. Otherwise, I think it's very good, and I do think it's really nice that it lists what we're going to work on in 2019. I think it's very helpful and a very good report and good efforts. And if I recall right, you also have saved money this year where things came in under bid, and that money will roll over to projects for 2019 and then 20.
Yes, it will. And that's part of the fund balance as well. Maybe Director Engel can discuss that as well. But, yeah, and what we'll do is going into the budget cycle this winter, which we're going into right now, I guess, and we'll put together a 5-year CIP. We'll update all those project costs of the other projects. And then whatever what additional funds that we have available, we'll program for new roads. And we'll be able to do new roads. So through value engineering, we hope to kind of, you know, do what we can to get that PCI as high as we can.
And I noticed, you know, in our financial reports that we'll be looking at shortly, it looked like our revenue of F-14 funds was higher than anticipated as well. So that as well will allow you to update and increase future projects.
Correct. Between additional revenue than more than expected, and then project cost coming below budgeted cost, and keeping, you know, the contingencies at bay will really help get additional miles of road done.
And will that help you pull things forward from a future year, you know, like pull things forward from 2021 into 1920, or how will that work?
We'll probably add roads just because what we're doing right now is it's a 12-year measure. There is a sunset date on this F-14, so the first 2 years we ran Street Saver to pick any road in town that needs it the most, and then we started going into 5 different areas of town. So that's why this past summer we did all those roads up in the north end of town. So now we're starting to go into the north, east, west, south, central districts. And so we'll try to pull roads in those areas and spend the money as quick as we can to get the most, to get ahead of this, because it's really, we're competing against time, really. So the quicker we can do these roads, the better. So that's something we can discuss coming into, you know, the budgets as part of the budget cycle.
Thank you.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes, 2 quick items. First, when When you do add the information to this that Councilor Memo Burbeau had requested about the non-city maintained roads, I'd encourage you to include the website so that people can see that, and as a reminder, they can look up the status of their own street or streets they may be on that may be of concern. So the more we understand what roads the city does and does not claim responsibility for maintaining, the better that is for everyone. And secondly, I know that part of the strategy for using these funds well is to try to direct the work to fix streets right before they fall into complete disrepair and require much more expensive strategies. And I wondered if you could address the extent to which the repairs in this that we're currently reviewing hit that sweet spot versus needing to repair roads that had gone into failure.
So on the brochure, there is PCI before and after, and there's breakpoints that we have for trying to catch those roads. And I get this asked this all the time. How come you're picking that road that's in good condition and this other one over here that... Mm-hmm. That's falling apart, you're not even considering that? Well, it all depends on where it falls into that. So if it's, you know, the PCI in the low 70s, it's probably going to be selected as a candidate to do some resurfacing or maintenance work done. If it's kind of hitting that, you know, 50 to 40 range, you know, in the 40s to 50s, it's probably going to be a candidate for rehab. So there's certain things like that. The roads we did, you know, that's why we typically have a resurfacing project and then a rehabilitation project. Sometimes we put all these roads, both have made the resurfacing and the rehab into one project, just because there might, like this past year, Capistrano was the only one that received a surface treatment. Mm-hmm. But it was like it didn't make any sense to just have that as a separate project. So we included that with the rehab project. So we kind of look at all those things and just try to catch it. I mean, we get this asked all the time, and I explain it to most people, they say, oh, that makes sense, you know, because you can do, you know, you can focus on the worst roads, but you're not going to get a lot of mileage of improved roadway, and you're still going to have all these other roads just, you know, fall into disrepair, or you could focus on the good roads, and that's all you're going to get. So.
Thank you.
I see no other questions. Might we have a motion?
I move that we accept or approve the 2018 annual road report and approve the community road report for distribution to the public.
Second.
As recommended by the CSTOC.
Be a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Burbeau, a second by Councilmember Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Burbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
All right. Now moving on to our 2017-2018 fiscal year audit, and this will be by our Administrative Services Director, Jerry Rangel.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to present to you this evening the audited financial statements for the fiscal year 17-18. The independent firm of Moss-Levy & Hertzheim was hired to perform the audit work. Mr. Travis Hole, a partner with the firm, is here today, and he can answer any questions you may have. The audit was conducted in accordance with the audited standards generally accepted in the United States and applicable to the financial audits contained in the government auditing standards. The auditors issued an unmodified opinion, meaning that the auditors agree with the financial statements were presented fairly in accordance with accounting principles. The city's financial performance was positive overall, and the general fund was better than estimated when compared to the 7-year forecast that was prepared in 2017. Tonight's focus will be on the general fund. The general fund is the fund in which the property tax revenues and sales tax revenues are collected and from which the majority of the city's operational costs are spent. It's the fund in which the council has the most discretion in spending. The audited financial statements include the sales tax measure F14, like we just heard from Director DeBar. That activity is included in the general fund for legal purposes. It is the community's desire and the council's intention, however, to use these funds primarily for roads. So while this activity is kept separate in the accounting records for transparency reasons, it must be included with the rest of the general fund for reporting purposes. The city received about $2.3 million in F14 revenue during the year and spent about the same amount on projects. The portions of the general fund revenue balance that is related to F14 was about $3 million at the end of the year. These funds are being and will continue to be used for road rehabilitation, as we just heard, as laid out in the city's five-year capital improvement plan. General fund activity excluding Measure F14 it ended the year with a net income of about $867,000. Revenues were about $21.8 million, and expenditures were about $20.9 million. The June 2017 7-year projection estimated a net loss of $367,600, so there was a positive variance of about $1.2 million. Council's long-term financial strategy is to supplement the annual revenues with general fund reserves during the lean years, and in order to continue to fund service levels at a consistent level. As projected, revenues are beginning to trend upward again, which is great news. And this year, the general fund balance at the end of the year was just over $12.8 million. To get a better perspective on trending, the comparative income statement compares revenues and expenditures for the prior fiscal year, 16-17, and the reported fiscal year of 17-18. Excluding Measure F14 activity is the report that's there before you. Some notable deviations from the prior year on the revenue side are changes in property tax revenues, sales tax revenues, grants, and some other revenues. Property tax revenue grew an additional 9.8% over the prior year. A portion of this increase, however, was due to a one-time revenue that the city's portion of the sale of the Creekside building. This amount was about $410,000. So again, this was a one-time event of the sale of the building, but it did help our property tax revenues for the year. Property tax revenues generally make up between 40 to 45% of all general fund revenues. So growth in this sector is always a good thing for us. The city saw a 5.1 increase year over year in secured property tax, which is the largest and most stable of the property tax components. And then sales tax revenue, the city's Bradley Byrne sales tax piece, was up about $438,000 from the prior year. Economic recovery, continued strengthening of the existing retail outlets, and the establishment of new retail outlets through the city's economic development focus are all positive factors that have led to the increase. Grant funding varies greatly from year to year based on the needs of the cities and what opportunities are available and what grants are awarded. The police department was able to secure a grant of almost $218,000 to replace their 911 emergency response system in the dispatch center. These funds made significant improvements to the technology, further enhancing emergency response. The city also received grants for fire fuels management, traffic and DUI enforcement, and Cal EMA and FEMA emergency funding reimbursements and funds for the El Camino corridor study. Development-related revenues were down a little bit compared to the prior year. And while this decrease might suggest a slowing, it's really a timing delay. Some of the projects that we expected to come online during the period were pushed out a little bit. And so we do expect that to continue to be a strong revenue sector for us. The category of other revenue was down a little bit, and this was mostly because of donations and administrative charges. We received a very generous one-time donation in the prior year, and the administrative allowance for the redevelopment program from of $120,000 reduction from the prior year. General fund expenditures were about $221,000 more than the prior year, and employee services was about 4% higher than the prior year, but right on target with the June 2017 7-year projection. Employee services make up about 72% of the general fund expenditures, so it's good to see that we're on track with those. Operating expenditures were about 10% over the prior year, and actual results were slightly under the projected 2017 7-year projection. The underlying trend, of course, is an increase in operating expenses due not only to increases CPI, but also because we purposely held those at a unrealistic low rate in order to kind of make ends meet. Special purchases and capital outlay, they don't really tend to go in a predictable trend. They're just usually one-time purchasers or things that have corresponding revenue sources. Both categories really vary from year to year. Also in that category, in 16-17, you may recall the City Council approved a one-time transfer of $1 million from the general fund reserve to the building maintenance fund reserve, and so that kind of hit that category. So it looks like a big deviation, but that is now sitting in the general or in the building maintenance reserves for use later on. The ending fund balance is better than anticipated in the original budget and up over the June 2017 7-year projection. General fund reserves, excluding Measure F-14 activity, were just about $9.9 million. This is about 47% as stated as a percent of general fund expenditures. The reserve totals continue to be in line with Council's long-range planning. The forecast anticipates the use of reserves through the year 22-23, but at no time are reserves expected to dip below Council's policy of 20%. As you may recall, some new accounting standards were adopted in 14-15 in the way that affects the city, the way that the city affects the pension obligation. The city is a member of the California Public Retirement System, CalPERS, and offers retirement benefits to its employees. The city's CalPERS retirement plans are included in the CalPERS public agency cost-sharing multiple employer-defined benefit pension plan. That's a mouthful. So essentially that means that we are pooled with other agencies similar in size. The city's net pension liability is affected by not only what the city does, but also the activities of the pool. At the end of the year, the net pension liability was about $26.8 million. This is an increase of 3.2 over the prior year, but there are a lot of factors that really make up that increase, but the biggest one is the change in the discount rate. However, assets did earn about 11.2% for the year, or 3.5% more than expected, but it just wasn't enough to kind of make the wash out the offset of the discount rate change. During 17-18, the city paid almost $1.5 million toward the unaccrued, toward the accrued liability. And that concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And as I said, Mr. Travis Hole is here from Moss Levy if you have any questions for him as well.
Thank you, Director. For those of you that just listened to this, you might find it extremely boring, or you might be someone who finds it extremely fascinating. Either way, the entire financial statements, the entire audit, and the financial statements, both general, not only general fund, but every other fund that the city has, that is all available online. The notes to the financials, a lot of discussion. So any information that you want, you can find there. Because what we're really doing tonight is we're accepting the financial statements. There's not a lot to do with this, so you might find this part a little bit boring, which is probably good for you, sir. I remember last year you having to wait through quite a long meeting to finally get to you. Before I bring you up, let me ask, are there any questions of staff, or should we bring our auditor online? All right, I will open up public comment, you being the public, and anything that you have to say before we may have any questions.
Yeah, not a ton to report this year. So I just wanted to let you know, part of our testing, let me lift this up a little bit. Part of our testing each year, we like to test a few different sites that the city has that collects cash, because that's, you know, where the highest fraud risk as far as internal control testing is. So this year we tested the fire department, the pavilion, and transit, and we didn't find any error, any errors or concerns in any of those departments. So happy to comment on that. As Jerry mentioned, we did give an unmodified opinion, which is the highest opinion we can give as auditors. What I always say is that doesn't mean that everything is correct to the dollar. We work on materiality thresholds, so we don't audit everything to the dollar, but everything is very close, if not absolutely correct. Jerry did a good job of explaining the net pension liability. So yeah, even though the investment returns were higher than expected, the liability did go up because the discount rate is slowly going to be going down to 7%. They're going to reassess that in 2022. We'll see how the market does over the next couple of years. But if we have another year like we just did, that discount rate could go down more, which would lead the liability to go higher. So that's just something to keep in mind. Another question I've been getting often is, the market, lost 6 or 7% this last year. Is the liability going to skyrocket? They built in things for that. It's called the deferrals, the deferred outflow. One of the deferred outflows is the difference between the expected investment returns versus actual. So that amount, if it doesn't, either higher or lower, that'll get amortized over 5 years into the pension expense. So there's not going to all of a sudden be, a huge increase in pension liability if the market doesn't do well in a year. And other than that, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Anybody who has questions for our auditor? All right. I like this group. is there any member from the public who has comments? Please state your name for the record.
Yeah, hi, Don Giesinger. I'm on the Oversight Committee. I'm not sure if I'm in, I might have got here a touch late, but being it's in the financial aspect of what we spend all our money on, can I comment? I just had a little something I wanted to say.
You're talking about the road?
The roads?
Road oversight?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we did do that beforehand. If you'd like to say something, it might be actually most appropriate for the very next item, which is our financial strategy that we're going through.
Okay.
I would ask the city attorney, is there a problem if I have him say something now?
No, excuse me. No, you could reopen that for purposes of hearing his comment. Apparently he...
Okay, so I would need to reopen specifically that item.
Yeah,
then.
But you probably want to finish this one first.
There we go. So why don't we hold off on that? I'll reopen that item as soon as we finish up this and then have you speak on that, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, sure thing. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? All right, so with that, public comment is closed. Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, did you have something that you wanted to say or ask of our auditor, or you just have a comment?
No, just comments.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Go ahead. Oh, fortunately for all of you, I spent about an hour today asking questions of City Manager and Ms. Rangel. So we went through every page and answered all my questions. But there are a couple of significant things I want to make sure everybody sees. And I think are worth discussing and possibly for discussion either in our strategic planning session or at some point in the future and certainly at some point during this year. The first is that on page 27, if you care to look, our wastewater fund, which is essentially our sewage treatment plant and the stuff, the pipes, et cetera, to get it there, has been operating at a loss the last 2 years. And this year, or this last year, that's subject to these financial statements, we had an operating loss of $445,000. And I think it's on staff's agenda, but we have to address that. We've maintained the same sewer rates for 20 years, so we're kind of long overdue for addressing that because we can't continue to lose money every year on running that, especially when we need to be building reserves for a plant. So I want to make sure everybody sees that and is aware of that. I also, if I understand correctly, in looking at expenses and revenue, that the zoo costs us about $1 million and pulls in about $400,000 a year. Is that correct, Ms. Rangel? Or just in broad terms?
It is a net loss of $600 a year.
Sounds about right, yes.
Okay. And then, you know, on the net pension liability, there was the change in the discount rate, but, you know, that has gone up almost essentially $3 million a year for the last 3 years. And it's a matter of significant concern. Our staff has done a really good job. We do a good job of conservatively budgeting so that our revenues have come in ahead of budget projections because we're conservative in doing that. And the staff has done a real good job of managing expenses so that we come in under expenses. So we make some progress each year on the general fund. But our overall situation is being eaten alive by our net pension liability going up almost $3 million, or in some cases more than $3 million a year. I think that's it. Those are the key things that really jump out at me in looking at these financial statements as issues of significant concern for the council.
And you are right. I think these are definitely things that we'll be talking about as strategic planning, that we have a certain amount of inflows and a certain amount of outflows, some of which we control and many of which we do not. And so I anticipate that being a significant part of what we are all talking about and strategizing about for the future of our city. And when it comes to the wastewater treatment plant, I would ask the city manager, I believe that is on our sort of on our plate to be addressing this coming year. I think we had hoped to get to it last year, but we have a lot to do, and unfortunately it did not happen as we would have liked it to, but we are moving forward this year. And that she's shaking her head yes, for those of you that cannot hear that. Thank you. Any other comments, or are we ready for a motion?
I'll move that we accept the financial audit for the period ended June 30th, 2018.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
All right. And now we are moving on to our comprehensive financial strategy, which will also be given to us by Administrative Services Director Jerry Rangel.
Thank you again. This is the comprehensive financial strategy. It is quite extensive. It goes into a lot of detail of the city's finances, expenditures, revenues, long-term costs, things that we need to worry about at some point down the road, issues like CalPERS, things like that. So it's a great resource, both to use internally with staff, with council, for the public. It is listed on our website. For anybody who wants to learn more, it's really a great resource, a great planning tool for us, things to kind of think about as we're going into strategic planning and into the upcoming budget cycle. So there are six sections in the report. The first one is kind of key actions that we've taken trying to get to pursue council's goals, revenues, expenses, long-term costs, reserves, and policies. So again, this is kind of an overview, big picture thing. This is kind of a living, breathing document. We've done our best to make all of the best estimates we can with the information that we have, but obviously all of that will change and be revised over time as we learn more information and can update those items. And then also this evening, we will be asking the council to approve Section 6, which is the policy section, and that would not...
My apologies for interrupting. I forgot to reopen public comment for that one item. I will ask our city attorney just procedurally, can I stop this and open for Mr. Giesinger to speak on that item? My mayor pro tem was supposed to remind me before I started this item, and he failed to do so.
All right. So Where are we now? We're doing the staff report, right?
We're doing the staff report.
Okay, well, you can have staff report, and then you can have your public comment after the staff report.
Well, this is public comment on the item that we already discussed.
Well, understood, but the way I understood this was we were going to take this item, hear the staff report, and then you were going to allow the speaker to comment on the road issue because it was relevant.
Oh, I thought you said I would reopen public comment from the first item. That's how I'd heard it, so...
We could do that either way. You could either reopen the former one, or I guess I could ask the city manager this question. Would the money that's being spent on the roads be relevant to this fiscal report, or is it a separate?
Yes, it would be.
It would be relevant.
Okay. Well, then we have a solution.
So we're going to go ahead and wait until the staff report is over, and we have some questions, then I'll open public comment. So you actually, I think, will find this interesting. So I hope you're not in a terrible hurry, but I think this will be interesting to you. Thank you. And I apologize for missing that. Thank you, Director.
Certainly. So the approval, we would ask that you would acknowledge and approve and review the entire report, but specifically approve by resolution the policy section. So this is the basic council financial strategy. So the squiggly line there represents our revenues. They go up and down with the economy, and the straight line is our expenditure line, which we expect to keep our operations consistent through the ups and downs in the economy. So as part of this strategy, we purposely use some of our general fund reserves when we're in the loop that's underneath the straight line, and when we have extra revenues, quote-unquote extra, then we would tuck those away in our general fund reserves to use in times like this. So we are currently scheduled, according to this document, we are estimating that we would continue to use general fund reserves through 22-23. The X shows about where we are now. So we're still under the line. We're still not quite, our revenues aren't quite matching our expenditure amount. So we have a few more years before we can get there, and the revenues will equal or exceed expenditures. This is all kind of part of the planning and budgeting process, so we need to keep this in mind as we move forward into the budget season. This is just a general visual of the budget process. So we are in the information gathering stage, information sharing stage. We try to share all that information and then move into more detailed budget process. The first section in the document is the key actions. So this is really steps and actions that we have taken for to pursue the council goals of economic development, including promotions in tourism and business-friendly community, downtown revitalization, and employee resources. Section 2 is on significant revenues. Property tax is our most significant revenue, as I just reported in the financial audit. About 40 to 45% of our revenues generally come from property tax. And this is made up by a bunch of different components, as I spoke of, secured property, current secured supplemental, property tax in lieu of vehicle license fees. So a lot of detail in here, but again, these are all still available in more detail in the report. We generally expect steady growth for property tax revenues. Both the County of San Luis Obispo and the State Legislative Analyst Office, or LAO, both project increases in assessed value into 2021. Sales tax revenue is our second biggest revenue source. It's generally between 15 and 20% of our general fund revenue. This, of course, is excluding Measure F-14, so we can just focus on what we're doing for other operations. Sales tax revenue per capita, you can kind of see how we compare to some of our neighbors. And it makes it difficult when some of our neighbors have a little bit more money to spend than we do, and people like to compare. Well, Paso can buy these things or do this. So this kind of gives a little bit more of the description about kind of where we are, status, and why it becomes kind of difficult to keep up with the Joneses, I guess. Transient occupancy tax has been a revenue that's been on the rise. So this is great news for us. With the help of the Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District, we have been seeing increases in TOTs, and we have a couple more hotels coming online. So we're looking forward to increasing revenues in this area. Building permit activity continues to be strong. We have seen significant activity over the recent future, and there are a large number of both residential and commercial developments that are kind of in the queue or at some level of planning and processing. So we'll look to this to continue as well. Section 3 is related to operating costs. These include employee services, general operations, special programs and projects, and capital projects. Employee services is our largest portion, again, of the expenditure, about 72%. This includes salaries and wages, health care, retirement, the PERS thing we were talking about earlier. We do have some increases in minimum wage that have been occurring and will continue to incur. We saw a $1 increase just this month, and we will see $1 increases every year through 2022 until we reach $15 an hour. Of course, this gets a little bit complicated to juggle, and it does kind of bump into our full-time salary schedule at some point, too. So one more thing to consider as we're looking at budgeting and planning for the future. We expect employee services to continue to grow, and really most of this is the CalPERS issue that we talked about. So we are seeing growth in both the normal cost rate, which is the percentage that CalPERS determines that the city will pay, and the UAL, or unfunded accrued liability. We are expecting an increase from 17-18, where we paid about 1.5 in total UAL, to 24-25, where it would be about $2.9 million is expected. So it's a $1.4 million increase, which is fairly significant for our size city. In the operations, these are costs related to regular ongoing operations, tools, utilities, insurance, contract services, those kinds of things. We do expect growth in these. And in the seven-year forecast that's in the comprehensive financial strategy, we do expect around 1% to 2% increase every year, which is really modest given where we are now and given the fact that we are at kind of an unsustainably low level, really. We're kind of operating as tightly as we can just really to make ends meet. We will need to consider as we go forward changes in regulations, propositions, water rights, animal control, those sorts of things. Section 4 is long-term costs. So these are things that are being used on a regular basis, but the costs are large and infrequent and therefore don't appear as obvious as ongoing costs. So they're a little bit kind of invisible costs, if you will. So we drive on our roads every day, as Director DeBar was trying to say in his earlier report on roads, you know, these, it's a race against time. I mean, we're using these roads, but if we're not putting away the amount that we use every day, then we're going to fall behind. So long-term costs in this section evaluates the costs of streets and bridges, storm drains, building and park replacement, technology, vehicles, and equipment, and also includes employee leave accruals. And these are really done at the best cost or best estimate that we have now, as I said. So we will revise these as we go. The streets and bridge maintenance, we are trying to get done about 22% of the citywide road system with a measure F14 over the lifetime of that, and that's expected to be about $19 million. Storm drains, these have historically kind of been kind of a source of mystery and concern to the city up until 2012 when we did an inventory of the system. And we found that actually they weren't quite as bad as we thought they could be. We have 52% in the good category, and overall 86% fall in the fair or better category. So there was really only about 5% that were kind of more in the needed to repair pretty quickly zone. So we haven't historically put away anything for storm drains, but we've been able to search for funding or grants or other methods to kind of take care of what we need to day-to-day to kind of make this work. But again, one of those things that we need to consider. Building replacement is also in here. So having redone this building, we kind of gained a little bit of strength in that way because we really spent a lot, $32 million, I think, getting this building back up and running. So that really advanced us forward. We haven't been putting anything away for building maintenance, and we've been able to kind of maintain the buildings with the operations costs that we have or looking for other opportunities for alternate funding. Technology replacement, we're almost completely funded in that. We that is our goal. We do have money to repair or replace computers, servers, the technology, because that really keeps us running efficiently. And so the technology department is always looking for new and better ways to do things so that we save money and keep as efficient and safe as we can be. Vehicle replacement. We fund mostly all of the vehicles except for those vehicles with longer lives. So the vehicles that have a 20-plus year life, we are currently not funding. We stopped funding those at the beginning of the recession and haven't returned to that yet. However, we did gain some ground on that with some generous donations. We were able to pay for a fire engine and replace or retrofit a couple of fire engines. So we, the fire department was really successful in kind of doing that. And each of the departments has tried to stretch their vehicles out to be a little bit longer life than we expected, to the extent that that makes sense, and that has really been beneficial for us as well. Equipment replacement, we haven't really historically put away. We were able to put away a little bit back before the recession began, and mostly we try to do these on grants, alternate funding, or just trying to plug it into our operating costs wherever we can. So we've been successful at kind of taking care of the urgent needs, but at some point we should probably think about funding that as well. Leave accruals, these are employee leave accruals, vacation, holiday, administrative leave, sick leave, and compensatory time. These are all items that are paid out essentially as they come due. So if an employee, a long-term employee that has a lot of leave time on the books, terminates employment, then we will pay out that amount. And if we need to, we just wait to rehire until we have the funding to do so. So we've been able to monitor this pretty well over time. Council did implement a new policy in 2012, which limited the vacation. And so we have been sticking to that vacation cap, and that has employees do not accrue any time beyond that vacation cap. Once they use some, then they'll accrue again up to the max. But that has been in place. Long-term costs in summary, it kind of seems scary when you look at some of those numbers, but really, if everything failed tomorrow and we had to fix it tomorrow, we'd probably have much bigger problems. So really, we're doing pretty good as we are. We just want to really keep this in mind, know what's out there, know what we have to be thinking about really for planning purposes. I think we're ahead of the game just even thinking about it, evaluating these, looking at these, looking for solutions. So we've made great strides, and we will continue to look for opportunities. Section 5 is reserves. The term reserves is pretty universal in governmental finance. There are different types of reserves, different purposes, different restrictions. They're basically a collection of revenues in excess of expenditures. So we have a number of different funds, over 40 in the city, and most of them have reserves in some manner, and most of them are restricted as well. But generally, we focus on general fund reserves for this discussion. There are a number of criteria that we go through to evaluate to kind of determine what is the appropriate level of reserves for us. I won't go into all of these in detail tonight in the interest of time, but there is a discussion of each of these in the strategy to review. We will kind of look real briefly, though, on just the policy to kind of keep this in mind, that we do need to think about the ups and downs of the revenue and keeping the operating costs flat or consistent, at least. The state of the economy is one of the bigger ones. We saw this slide earlier, trying to determine where we are, if we should be saving excess reserves or excess revenues, or if we should be using reserves to keep our operations stable. Another thing to look at is the level of diversity in general fund revenue. This compares our city to other cities in our county and just kind of gives a brief picture of the concentration of each of our revenues. As I said, a big portion of our revenues come from property tax and sales tax, so we are heavily concentrated there. For cities that have more diversity, maybe they have a little less reserve requirements. And stability of the revenue base is another one. This is a property tax per capita, so it kind of gives you an idea of where we are, and the trending line, and sales tax per capita. General fund balance in dollars. We can see that we have ups and downs in this as we have gone through our ups and downs in the economy. But as of June 30th, 2018, we had about $9.9 million in general fund reserves, excluding Measure F-14. And Section 6 is on policies and practices. So these are really the policies and practices that we put into place to be good stewards of the community's money. So there's a number of different things in here. I won't go through them all, but really to just consider all of the long-term and short-term things that when we are looking at a decision, we need to consider the long-term effect of those, not just the short-term as well. We need to consider when we're looking at a new program, are we going to cut another program or reduce something somewhere else because we can't just keep adding on forever? We just want to make sure we have adequate funding. So there's a number of different policies in here as well. Also, there's a mid-cycle budget review. So we are in the second year of a two-year budget, and we have made some adjustments since we have adopted the original budget. So when we adopt a budget, we adopt it with whatever MOUs or memorandums of understanding with the employee groups that are in place at the time. Earlier this fiscal year, we adopted new MOUs with some of the employee groups, and the results are the salary increases that are in these funds that are listed here. So the bulk of the increase is in the general fund because that's where the bulk of the employees are paid from. There are effects to the other funds as well. And then insurance costs were up a little bit this year too. There were some larger claims in our pool. We are a part of the California Joint Powers Authority, and there were some larger claims in the pool that affected our costs. And then in addition, legal costs, we're requesting another $49,000. The city's spent so far about $23,000 this fiscal year in, or just the first 4 months of this fiscal year in costs related to representation with prosecution of criminal cases, and we expect that to need an additional $30,000 for those items, and also another $19,000 for personnel-related issues that have come up during the year. So those combined would be the $49,000 requested. And then I also wanted to bring to your attention, we did have a request for an amendment of Section 6. So on page 87 of your booklet or in your agenda package, page 379, we would like to request to change the wording to continuing to the fullest extent possible. This is regarding Community Facilities District under Community Development. Continuing to the fullest extent possible to annex projects into the Community Facilities District by requiring all residential products that consist of five or more residential units to annex into the Community Facilities District. So it is the red items there that are not lined out are the items we'd like to add, and of course the struck through words are what we'd like to remove from Section 6. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director. As with the previous item, we have this very wonderful comprehensive financial strategy that our Administrative Services Department has spent a lot of time putting together, I know with the input of other departments as well. And for those of you that aren't really into, you know, nitty-gritty details, this is more interesting. It goes into detail, but it's very much in layman's terms. It's easy to understand and flow through, whereas audited financials can seem a little bit dry. This gives a lot of detail and information, and a lot of questions you might have could be answered in here. And then if you have additional ones, of course, you know, any staff can answer those. But this is really an excellent report, and you've done a really good job, so thank you. So what I want to start out with tonight is to be clear on what we're doing. We are to review and file this document, and then we are adopting the draft resolution that is approving the policies in Section 6, and then adopting the budget amendment. And so what I would just recommend for us here to really focus our questions on what we need to get answered in order to go forward with these recommendations. And if we've got other ones, which I'm sure a lot of us have more as we go through this, that we can get those answered by the city manager. And then, of course, when we're talking about the significant issues, as Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau brought up and the director has been talking about all along, and even Mr. Shaw from our Sales Tax Oversight Committee, that we do have some, you know, some liabilities out there that we're not able to put away for. And so that is our job as a council to look and see what are we going to do, what are our strategies to be addressing that into the future. And so strategic planning will certainly be key to that. And with that, I will see what questions we might have. We will start with Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, followed by Councilmember Funk.
Thank you. In regards to draft resolution A, which is adopting the policies, you specifically called out this change here. Are there any other changes from last year? I mean, or is this, or are these pages that essentially we're adopting as policy the same as last year, with the exception of this on the screen?
As far as the entire Section 6?
Yes.
There were probably some minor adjustments here and there. There weren't any significant items to my recollection.
Okay. That's okay, because nothing jumped out at me as being substantially different in any way, but since that's what we're adopting in the draft resolution, I just wanted to make sure. So basically, this is the change. Yes.
And I just wanted to clarify, the change in the wording for this is just that, a change in the wording. It's not a change in the policy. We've had this policy for some time. There's just some confusion because we mentioned the general plan and 100 units. We want to make it absolutely clear that, no, this applies to all residential projects that are 5 or more units.
And it has for a while.
It has been for a while.
Correct. Got it. All right. Well, that's all I needed to know about that. Thank you.
Councilmember Funk.
I will not go through all my little stickies tonight, but I did have a very constructive discussion with the city manager, and we'll have some more, I'm sure, as I get acquainted with the details. I want to, first of all, in deference to our very patient member of the Citizens Sales Tax Oversight Committee, who's here with us tonight, would ask the staff to clarify what industry sector is the largest source of sales tax for our community.
It is fuel.
Yeah. In terms of the policies of the city, as we're looking in reviewing this, we're trying to be judicious in our use of general fund reserves over time. I do notice that we have that the policies and projections include continuing to use those general fund reserves for an additional few years, moving us up to the edge of the time when Diablo Canyon is scheduled to close. And I would ask the staff to clarify both, you know, a couple of key points of how we are incorporating projections, the impact of Diablo Canyon closure into these longer-term projections in the out years, and also when we expect to update those projections with better information.
The there are some impacts of the Diablo closure, and they're certainly very cognizant as we do these projections to the future. We are not sure of exactly what those impacts are. The city receives very little revenue directly from Diablo Canyon. Where we believe the impacts will be is there about 250, we'll call it 250, head of household jobs of residents that live here in Atascadero. There will be some changes to the economy. Each of these head of household jobs pays an average of about $150,000, and that was in 2013 per year. Who, as these people move out of the area to find other jobs in their industry, who will be moving in? And there is certainly a concern that it could be a lot of retirees and a different demographic that moves in to replace these head of household jobs. What the direct effect of that will be on things such as housing prices, which affects our property tax, the economy, how do they spend? Retirees spend different than homes, young families, all of those types of things. Is a guess. The Monning study, Senator Monning passed some legislation to figure out what will be the economic effects on the Central Coast and each community. That study is currently underway. It is going to go past the deadline of when it was expected, but we will expect to see that probably in about another year or so. From there, how good or how detailed that information is, we're not sure of, but it's a good baseline to then project from there. We're going to constantly be adjusting our revenue projections. So when we were doing negotiations last year, we did some updated revenue projections. When we do this mid-year and our financial strategy, we'll do that. We'll certainly continuing to be doing that throughout the budget process. We want to kind of constantly look at that and adjust our revenues and what we think the picture is, not just for Diablo, but any other changes in our economy. In the meantime, we have some very conservative property tax growth. We have some fairly conservative sales tax growth. We're not positive that there will be a ton of impact on things such as fuel purchases from the closure of Diablo. But there may be. So it's a conservative outlook, but things it is something that we're going to continually monitor. Okay. Did I get that right, Director Engel?
Yes, that's correct. Okay.
And one last thing that we noted, increasing insurance costs Both and my understanding is that this has involved two categories of insurance, actually, that we have I see in the numbers, a steady 6% annual increase in health insurance costs that is absorbed entirely by the city, that increase, and clearly is an ongoing burden for the community. And then the other is the increase in cost for insurance that we incorporated in due to other impacts on our pool. Does that include the impact of the major wildfires recently or the mudslide in Montecito that was a sequelae of a wildfire, or do we have even more of this yet in our future?
The property tax liability, I mean, the property insurance is handled a little bit differently than the liability in the workers' comp. Certainly, we have seen some of the differences in our property property insurance. We saw a substantial increase and a reexamination of all of the city's asset list and other things to make sure that they are covered. The amount of city liability for those in the pool for the fires and the mudslide, I am not aware. I'm going to look at Director Rangel of any out there.
We haven't been informed of anything from the CJPIA on this yet, so we are continuing to work with them to kind of anticipate what's coming down the line, but haven't heard anything in that regard.
Okay, thank you.
All right, looking to the lights, I see no other questions, and so we will open it up to public comment, and thank you, Mr. Giesinger, for your patience.
Thank you. Yeah, Don Giesinger, thanks for the time. I'm on the Oversight Committee, but actually this is the venue that I really should be at anyway. But I did want to make a comment with Nick DeBar, what a great job he's doing and what the Oversight Committee is doing. The idea was we have a half a cent, we got 2.5 to 3 million today, every year, and it's going to grow and grow and grow. So it will be a substantial amount of money. But I did want to address the council, being it's new, and glad to see what an attractive group it is. Charles, it's okay. I've been here a little over 40 years, and the 40 years ago plus, I was looking at the sales tax because I've always been in retail, and I says, what's with the Atascadero getting only half what Paso Robles gets? Yet the population is the same. What's with this? So I drive up to Paso Robles, and I look around and say, well, yeah, there's a business here, a business there, downtown, this and that. You can kind of see the drift of it. But now, today, 40-some years later, we were 100% behind then, so let's make it simple. $1,000 we took in, they took in two. Today we take in 1,000, they could take in almost four. We're going backwards. Now the reason I'm here a little bit is with the road, we got this money, and I know you have a problem trying to get the revenues that we need. It's really a battle. It's always been a battle. But we want to keep the oversight and the road money for roads, and that's why we did this. So it's extremely important that that 2.5 and 3 million and 4 million down the road get spent for roads. I don't want the city council to take that road budget that they have and think, well, they got enough for roads, we can spend it on other things. So I want you to be really careful with that. I know it's going to be tough. You got to do the best you can, but I know we need the roads, and I tell you why I think we need the roads. We forget one thing. I noticed up there, it was kind of very interesting, Heather, that how interesting that was. How much goes to property tax, let alone sales tax? Property tax is huge. There's some roads that are so bad in Atascadero that imagine what those property values could be if we had a good road. They would be up. They would resell. It's not helping homeless. It's not helping what you call affordable housing, but really that's, you know, two categories. We have affordable housing, we have more expensive houses. Tascadero has a hard time because the land values are so hard, but at the same time, roads will help. I think roads will help. I think, it'll bring in, I didn't know I was limited on this, but I guess.
You're limited to 3 minutes. Why don't you take another 30 seconds? We've got a light crowd.
30 seconds. So my main thing is Nick is doing a great job. The Oversight Committee, I think, is really going to get her, we're doing a good job making sure everything gets done properly. And as long as the city council can keep working on keeping their budget, and I think there's one thing I can address in another 10 seconds that, you know, I'd really like to improve the sales tax. I think this tiny home thing, if we address that, because there's one community that could really excel in that, would be Atascadero, because we have such big lots. That would bring in very little infrastructure cost, but yet bring in people that will spend money and buy food and et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you.
So nice meeting the new city council and a couple of the other ones too.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you. Bye now.
Anyone else from the public wishing to speak on this item? All right, seeing none, I will close public comment and bring it back to the council. And I do want to assure our last speaker and the public that I don't think there's anyone up here that thinks we have enough for roads, and so we'll put it elsewhere. F-14 is slotted for roads, and I think every one of us, not just on the council, but throughout the city, is committed to using it there. So no worries. Do we have any other comments or questions, or are we ready for a motion?
I'm ready to make a motion. I move we accept and file the comprehensive financial strategy, a very good report, and adopt draft resolution A and draft resolution B.
And A as amended.
Yes, correct.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau, second by Councilmember Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Now we'll move on to our Sunken Gardens Heritage Tree Removal and Replanting Plan, and this is our Community Development Director, Phil Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. Well, it's that time again, taking a look at our park. It was just about a year or so ago that we were looking at another tree in the park. That was our deodar cedar that we had lost. And now we're looking at one of our magnolias that, unfortunately, we've lost. But looking at the positive side, I think we're very fortunate in our community to have a park, a gardens, that exceeds 100 years in age. And it still has some of those original species in it that were originally planted that were done at the time of really the origin of our city. It's really unique opportunity to take a look at that. Anyway, unfortunately, that tree, which we recently designated as a heritage tree, along with the rest of the trees in Sunken Gardens Park, is in severe decline. I think it's just about dead. This year, all the foliage is gone, and the tree is beyond salvageable. Here's a photo of how it looked in 2005 when we were doing a significant remodel of Sunken Gardens. Had all of its foliage then. It was doing quite well. And it actually wasn't really impacted at all by the development. But unfortunately, a few years after this, it did develop a fungus in the root system. And multiple attempts we've tried to bring it back. We've had arborists look at it and do different things. But unfortunately, here we are today. Lost its last few leaves here just a few months ago. And that's not a deciduous tree. It's an evergreen. So it's not looking too good. So what we're asking the council this evening is to pass a resolution to remove that tree, since it is in our heritage tree list. We do have to get council approval for that. So we do have a resolution for you tonight to do that. So what you're looking at there in that picture as well is just some of the fungus. Those are actual mushrooms that are growing from the base, and that's just an indicator that the fungus is now really taking full advantage of the wood rot that's going on in that unfortunate tree. Cost estimate, we're assuming to be less than about $2,000. We've dug around and looked at some options, but there will have to also be some treatment to the soil, and we're going to be working with an arborist to see how we can treat the soil, eliminate the fungus, so that when we do ultimately replant, we don't end up with the same issue with a future tree in that location. But this brings me to another discussion. It's a bigger discussion about what to do with the rest of the park. And I want to take a step back in time just a little bit to sort of help us with that. I'm not going to be asking the council tonight to make a decision on that. I wanted to introduce the topic about what I call reforestation or replacement of the trees and looking at, you know, the possibilities of planting now for succession to get growth while the old ones phase out. And looking at ways that we can select the right varieties to replace those original trees while maintaining the historic symmetry of the park and the features that we have in the park. We will be consulting with arborists regarding tree spacing and planting methods, and we're still gathering that information. But I think now we can look at the history and of what Sunken Gardens Park really means and what it should continue to reflect for our community. Originally, it was a formal park, really planted with design elements based on a formal theme. Some call it BioArts or you know, Italian theme. It's the colonnaded buildings, landscaping within public spaces, and that formal garden that was originally planted. Originally, it was really a garden with pathways and smaller plant species. And then in 2005, later on, there was a significant project to remodel that park to sort of bring back those pathways. But this early photo could actually show us some of those early species. I think that one that's circled in green there is actually one of the cedars. And in fact, some other photographs, you can see the pattern of the four cedars, and that's one of those cedars. It was about the size of a Christmas tree back there in the 20s. I wonder if they ever imagined how big those trees would actually get. Mm-hmm. And here's a picture from the 50s when we had a gas station in Sunken Gardens Park. And you can see those four big cedars starting to gain their big mature size in the center of the park. And at that time, we still had a number of other trees that were planted around the park that were some of those original garden specimens that were maturing. You can also see the magnolias in that picture as well. Mm-hmm. A little later on, this is about the 60s, looks like they were finally demolishing that gas station in this particular picture. This is about 1969, and the cedars are there in their growth. And then some of the other conifers that were planted around the fountain that later on were removed. It was 2005 where the real significant remodel to bring back those semi-formal pathways and bring back sort of some active use to the park that really changed things and really brought it to what it is today. And at that time, there were some additional trees that were planted just a few years prior to this, and those were the four oak trees that are closest to El Camino Real. So a couple of years ago, this was this sort of in a graphic format. This is the trees that were there. The two magnolias at the corner of East Mall and West Mall and Palma, the four giant cedars, and then the other four green trees there are the coast live oaks that were planted much more recently. And those are the ones that are coming to maturity now. So today, here's what it looks like. We're missing those two trees just about. Well, if we take the magnolia out and then the cedar, which was taken out just a year or two ago. And so this gives us a basis from which to sort of think forward and design how to put these things back. The easy way might just be replace the same trees and put them back and then continue planning for succession. But there's other options out there. We could go with a more native tree palette, matching the coast live oaks that have been planted in more recent years and the coast live oaks that exist along East and West Mall. So these are some of the options that are open for discussion. But perhaps the path of least resistance and to match the history would be to match the varieties that are there and to really plan for that succession now and look at spacing and planting that can continue to succeed what's there. So with that, I'm going to ask for your feedback on those issues, but also asking for the resolution to allow staff to go ahead and move forward with the deceased Southern Magnolia. That's the variety. It's a Southern Magnolia at the corner of East Mall and Palma. Provide feedback for us to come back to you with an actual formal plan after we've got some input from local arborists to determine the trees that can be replanted, where they can be replanted, how to deal with the soil, and so on. And a sample of what we can bring back to you is something along these lines, just showing how we can possibly plant in succession, what varieties we should put in, but essentially creating a graphic plan like this to show the replanting. That concludes my report for now. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Director. I will look to the lights, and we'll start with council questions with Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. A question for you regarding the, and this may be for Mr. DeBar, regarding the stormwater retention that's proposed for underneath the sunken gardens. Do we need to factor that in when we talk about future trees in terms of needing that water or using the water or getting fungus because of the water?
So one of the things to be factored in is that project that was proposed as part of the downtown watershed plan would be on the City Hall side of the sunken gardens between basically the fountain and Palma. So in this exhibit here, it'd be on the, I guess, the upper right side. And it would be kind of in that area. So that wouldn't be, you wouldn't really want to plant trees over that particular structure just because it could, like, impact and get down in there, and just it wouldn't be a good environment for trees because it would be empty. There'd be like a chamber down there. These are typically used a lot of times underneath parking lots even. And so, but if you kept it outside of those confines, like, you know, the side serpentine sidewalk that goes from the corners of Palma and East and West Mall there, kind of in that boundary area, if you kept the trees out of that, it should be fine. There shouldn't be an issue.
Thank you. And a question regarding the live oak trees, that we could go with the native tree, which is the coastal live oak. But I've always heard that when you have irrigated grass, sometimes they get problems too. Is that the case?
It can be the case. That's more typically the case with a pre-existing native tree, where suddenly you introduce it into a landscape setting and give it a lot more water than it's ever had, then typically it introduces a fungus to it. But strangely enough, from what I've heard from arborists, if you plant a coast live oak from a young sapling and it has that unchanged condition and continues to grow in that environment, such as the ones that are in our park now, they actually thrive and they grow much faster than the ones in the wild, and they don't seem to get that same fungus issue if they were started out dry and native and then introduced to a really wet environment later on.
Another factor that we might want to consider, and I don't know enough to know what the lifespan of trees are, but I know that they do have a lifespan. I planted trees that lasted for 20 years and then they died, and it was normal, and that was the way it was. I think that's something we want to avoid. If we're going to put them in, we want to be a long-lasting tree that provides shade for those that use the park for many years. So I would just throw that on the table as another factor to consider. Thank you.
Any other questions right now? Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, followed by Councilmember Funk.
Speaking of lifespans, what, since the cedars and the living magnolia are both very old, are all very old, do we know what the anticipated lifespan is for those large trees we have right now?
That magnolia on the other corner, it looks fantastic. It's just an amazing tree. It looks super healthy. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of unpredictable. Now, the cedars, they do appear that they're reaching their max peak for a park-like setting. We've gotten 100 years or so out of them. That's pretty darn good. It's hard to predict what a tree has left, but they are showing their signs of aging, so there is a possibility we could see another one get into that state of decline like the other one did a year or two ago. That being said, I think it's probably the best candidates for doing succession or doing replanting to plan for their eventual removal and their eventual failure as they begin to age and become hazardous.
All right, yeah, because I think it's important to plant, you know, and not wait till you have a big open space and plant a twig. But in that regard, on this map here, there's kind of open space as you get closer to El Camino before you get to the oaks on the corners. Were there ever trees in those kind of fairly open space, I'll call it? You see in there between, like on the one side between the existing old cedar and the corner, there's a good 50 to 100 feet there with no trees, and the same on the other side. Were there ever? I mean, I guess there weren't. Apparently.
It doesn't appear that any of these older photographs show any trees in that big open span there.
Okay. All right. I'm always a fan of symmetry, and it just seems like we have some open space there.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, thank you. I think that answers my questions.
Councilmember Funk.
Yeah, following up on that question from Councilmember Verbeau, is there a reason that we would not want to consider putting replacement trees in those spaces and allowing them to grow up so that we're not trying to plant the cedars replacements right underneath them?
I think all options are really open right now. But really what I'm trying to introduce tonight is topics on the table and the symmetry, the history, the species that were there. And again, sort of the program for the park, which is keeping some larger open spaces for recreation and events and keeping the view shed of City Hall. Those are the things we have to keep in mind with any planting plan.
And secondly, are the trees that we have here on the Sunken Gardens also provide important shade for the areas on over East Mall and West Mall and the businesses on the sides of that? Are there considerations in terms of the species of tree that we use that would have that might differ if we have two-story buildings along West Mall or East Mall that might, say, accommodate an orthodontist on the second floor and a restaurant on the first or a model of that kind?
I think the same tree palette could work in either way, whether there's single-story or two-story buildings. But that does bring up a good point, and that is, you know, the trees on East Mall and West Mall themselves are beginning to get to a pretty substantial age, as we lost the one a few years ago in front of Sylvester's. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to eventually plan for their succession as well. Mm-hmm. And is the coast live oak the right variety? So those are all good open discussion topics.
And then lastly, are there considerations, are there major differences in the trees that we're currently considering in terms of their speed of growth to something of, you know, larger than twig size, and to where they provide real shade? And also their lifespan in the conditions where, as Councilwoman Fonzi pointed out, they're getting a fair amount of water and fertilizer from the overlaying lawn.
And these are all good topics to consider as we look at the replanting plan. The cedars, at an early age, they can actually get a pretty good rate of growth, but it's going to be quite a few years before we see it become an actual shade tree. Some of the others, for example, the coast live oaks that are in there now, the four of them there, they were planted, I understand, in the late 90s at a 15-gallon tree size, which is a pretty small mm-hmm. tree. And you look at the size of them now, they're pretty substantial trees. It's kind of interesting. I was talking to Corey Meyer, and he himself, along with another individual, planted those trees for an Arbor Day event. Mm-hmm. And he had the year written down and all the information, and he was able to share that with me recently when I was asking him if he knew information, the background of the trees. So it's interesting in that setting. It's true with the water and the fertilizer, some of these trees, whether they're native or even the non-natives, they can grow pretty quick in their first 10, 20 years to where they can produce some shade and excel.
Okay.
Any other council questions? I'll look to the lights. Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau.
So essentially we're talking about three different kinds of trees, you know, magnolia in the corner, cedars or oaks. Are there any others that you have considered or either in conjunction with Public Works or any other experts or whatever? Are there any other ideas you've considered or discussed? Or would?
Not at this time. That topic's open, though, and we're open to suggestions and ideas of different trees to look at. We're actually looking also at a bigger picture of the street trees that we should be putting back in, and also the plaza across the street that's going to be constructed with the La Plaza development. We're looking at a palette for that, too, and it might be a little different. But the topics, I think, again, back to Sunken Gardens are history, you know, durability, view shed, symmetry, what works in the park. The trees that were there, they gave us 100 years, pretty darn good. So it's sort of been tested and tried and proven. It's difficult to get away from the palette that's there.
Are there any issues with coast live oaks? I know at least a lot of personal properties, you know, they drop a lot of pointy leaves. They're not fun to sit on or step on. But is that not an issue because we're mowing every week or what have you?
You know, It's a potential issue. I mean, coast live oaks drop all year. They're messy.
Yep.
They do really well in our area because they're the most predominant native tree. They grow like a weed, is what the arborists tell me. But yeah, they drop continuously, and they have acorns, and they need a lot of maintenance. So these are all good topics to discuss.
Okay, thanks.
Councilmember Funk.
I also wondered if we had considered valley oaks, which are less common but are also native to this area, and the one in our backyard's doing pretty well.
Certainly a good option. We definitely put that one on the table. It's deciduous, which makes it a little different in the winter, but great tree, does super well, very, very drought tolerant. I don't know how well it would do here with a high water table and things like that. That's one of the only drawbacks of that type of tree. They do grow to a great substantial size. They're the biggest oak tree we have in our area. So it's certainly a valid option. In fact, it, you know, would become at some point a stately tree like the cedar, you know, in 100 years from now. So that's certainly an option.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. Yeah, you bring up a good point about the valley oaks. I think that maybe this discussion should go towards deciduous versus evergreen. There's going to be some maintenance and some expense with raking and taking care of the leaves and getting them gone. There's other native trees that are very popular in our city that are along Atascadero Avenue, and they're sycamores. We generally do the London Plains because they're more drought, they're more disease resistant, but it is a possibility, but they do drop a lot of leaves. So maybe that should be among the factors we consider.
Any other questions of staff at the moment? I only had one, and it was just looking at that map that you had up there of the sort of the outline of sunken gardens. And so are you, you had it. No, sorry, the one with the trees, the possible replantings. Yeah, there you go. So you're looking at just this option is a new Deodar cedar where the old one was, and then actually planting another one while the other one is on its last leg, so to speak.
So we're looking for feedback from arborists to say, how close could we plant it and be safe and have it still succeed and be well? And then maybe, you know, 5-10 years from now, we pull the other one out and the other one's already gained some height and size so that, so to speak, we plant two at one time and then end up with good symmetry in the
park.
Or several, we could plant maybe three at one, four at one time, so that we all, at some point, we have trees that are all about the same age and they have good, you know, they're not, we're not just having a sudden impact to the park by pulling out a tree and having a very small new one.
Okay.
So we're looking at those sorts of options, yes.
Okay. So before I open it up to the public, I think what you're really looking to us for tonight is obviously approval to remove the one, the southern magnolia. And then the rest of it is just the ideas that we and the public might be throwing out for you to then go speak with the arborists, with the professionals, and bring us back some different options that the public can weigh in and we can talk about and say, here's how we see sunken gardens going forward. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, so I will go ahead and open it up to public comment. If there are any of our members of the public here that would wish to speak on this item? No? All right. Seeing nobody approach, we'll bring it back to council for further discussion and eventually a motion.
I move approval of the recommendation to remove the dying tree.
I'll second that.
All right, so we do have a motion to adopt the draft resolution for removal of the tree from Councilmember Funk, seconded by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bobo?
Yes.
Sorry. And Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
All right. And so now, in terms of direction, I think what we've really talked about is, you know, obviously, you know, symmetry, historical representation, the dropping of leaves, how quickly something might build up. We've gone through a lot of different things here. Maybe, Director, you want to kind of repeat back to us, here are the things that I'm going to be considering and see if there's something that any one of the five of us say, ah, hey, look at this.
Yes, what I've heard tonight is taking a look at different varieties, In other words, deciduous versus evergreen, possibly looking at valley oak and sycamore and other varieties that are possibly native or even non-native for the park. We're going to be getting some arborist opinions on spacing and varieties, but all while maintaining the historic symmetry of the park, the historic design setting of the park, and the recreation space and usability of that park, and considering the future of whether that park gets used for water infiltration as part of our downtown plan.
And when do you expect to be bringing this back?
As soon as possible.
Well, I'm not in a hurry for it. I don't mean like, sure. Is it coming back at the next session? But do you think this is a three-month thing?
This is probably more like a one-month thing. So it's pretty quick. We're actually talking to the arborist now and getting feedback now. So we wanted to introduce this, see if there's some public testimony on the issue. I'm probably ready to bring this back probably either late February, early March. Pretty quick.
Okay. Any other input that we want to provide to the director, Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes, you can shut me down on this one if you want to, because it's really out there. But, you know, we're taking out the southern magnolia. Do we need to consider something else besides a tree should be there? Whether it would be a gazebo, a bandstand, a concrete slab where we put our annual Christmas tree and light it up? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there for discussion.
That sounds like added maintenance and...
Possibly so. I just didn't want to leave something
I personally
out.
Would love to see a southern, another magnolia there, but how viable that is, I don't know. What other ideas or
well,
things
I think
people have?
The valid point that Councilmember Fonzie is making now is that now is the time to think about other things and not, you know, plant another magnolia in 5 years from now. I wish we'd done something different.
Yes, exactly.
So I mean, I don't know if any of those are a good idea or not, but now is the time to think about that stuff.
Well, I think that starts to take us in a different direction, and so if that's the sort of direction that the council wants to provide, but I think it's hard for us to just say, hey, this is a possible option because staff doesn't really know what to do with that beyond us giving them specific direction.
I mean, I would just say to staff that, you know, if you have any other ideas, I'm open to hearing them as well, but... Yeah, barring that, planting another magnolia seems to make the most sense.
Okay.
As long as the other one isn't going to die 5 years from now and then we're...
So I think what we're saying is if you have creative ideas, we are open to hearing what those might be. Really, there's no limits on this, so go ahead and tell us whatever you want to bring back to us, we are open to.
Thank you. Staff will take all those things under consideration.
Fabulous. Thank you very much. And I don't think you need anything more from us. Is that correct? All right. Okay, so now we are on to council announcements and reports. And I'll go from my left to my right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to actually combine these because sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. And so just sort of as a policy going forward, we will put this all together. So the council announcements and reports, just so everybody's clear what those are, is those on our initiative, you know, if we're in... there's something we want to make a brief announcement about an activity or something in the community that we're involved with. Maybe we're asking for clarification, making a referral to staff for some reason to take action. Those are the council announcements and reports. And then we have our committee reports, and each of us sits on committees that are city committees as well as county committees, and we report on those to you, the public, and here to our colleagues because we don't talk about that outside of these meetings. So I will go ahead and start, again, left to my right, Council Member Newsom.
Thank you. I get to speak. We just returned from the League of Cities in Sacramento with our colleagues. It was a very informative 2.5 days. We're able to really get to see how to best represent our community and to really understand how to serve in our new roles. So I appreciated that. We're having a City of Atascadero Design Review Committee tomorrow at 2 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Warbeck.
Yeah, I attended two committee meetings since our last meeting. First, the IWMA, the Integrated Waste Management Authority. The substantial item from that is that we will be conducting interviews at a special meeting on February 1st for a new permanent general manager. So those have been narrowed down to 3 applicants, so we'll be interviewing them for that position. And then also, I attended again the Homeless Services Oversight Council because Councilmember Funk was also in Sacramento at the League of Cities event. The most significant thing to report is that the biannual, so every 2 years, homeless point in time count will be taking place on the morning of January 28th. So it takes place in odd numbered years. So it took place in 2017. They are still looking for some volunteers, and there is volunteer training still on Thursday at North County Connections at 6 p.m. So I'm going to attend that because I intend to be a volunteer on the morning of the homeless point in time count. And the volunteers go along with guides. You know, guides are usually former, or I suppose in some cases even currently homeless folks who help kind of know where to go to try to find folks to count. That's about that. We did reappoint the same chair and vice chairs of the committee, Councilmember Burnish from Arroyo Grande and Miriam Shaw from Grover Beach is the vice chair of the committee. And those are the most important items. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's see. So I had SLOCOG 2 weeks ago. Fred Strong from Paso Robles was elected chairperson, and John Pichong, First District Supervisor, is vice chair, and then Mayor Ed Wagge is also on the executive committee. The big issue on the agenda that day was voting to move forward, actually fund the research for the potential closure of El Campo. And so that's a big issue right now in South County with the death of the young man and let alone other accidents that have happened there over the years. And so that is moving forward. The County Mayor's Roundtable attended that a week or so ago. Nothing particular to report from there. Economic Vitality Corporation, I'll be going tomorrow, and this will be following up on our strategic planning that we had started back in November. We will be continuing that process tomorrow. I also attended the League of California Cities with my colleagues and with the city manager, and I found it to be very useful. Also had several meetings with regards to the ABC issue that we've all been talking about the past year, and that is that ABC is interpreting some certain rules in Atascadero that are placing limits on our downtown businesses, and that is having a hindrance in terms of, you know, mixed use and our businesses being able to be vibrant and really develop that downtown that we want. So I did have a meeting with our legislative advisors, also talked a bit with Senator Monning and Assemblyman Cunningham, but more importantly, and Councilmember Funk and City Manager, the three of us went to Senator Wiener's office. And there are two potential legislative options that we could be pursuing here. We don't have tremendous detail. There is still information that needs to be to brought to us to see what might make sense. But the time is of the essence because we've got a certain legislative schedule for when things need to get in. So as we know more, we will report that out. And I do want to thank Councilmember Funk. She has a legislative background, and I think really enjoys this and got right up to speed. And so maybe if you would like to be the one to kind of be point person on this and keep us all informed, that would be great. Yeah. And let's see, with that, I'm finished with my reports.
Air Pollution Control District is tomorrow, and they will be setting their priorities for the next year. I anticipate that this will be a heated discussion, and I will bring that information back to you and represent Atascadero's viewpoint on that. The Atascadero Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency is going forward with their study. We received the scope of the study and the way that it'll fold out in terms of planning impacts, future growth, and other things. It will be very definitely something that we'll need to consider as it goes forward. They are expecting a two-year study time, and the report will be out. So we've got some time for feedback, and they will be looking for it. The design review is tomorrow. One of the items is actually a rather interesting one with tiny homes that would be placed at the corner of Del Rio and I guess it would be whatever the frontage road is there. I'm not sure what the name of the road is, but you would know.
It's really just, well, it's, I guess Ramona comes out there, but
Ramona,
it's Del Rio,
thank you.
And the freeway frontage is on the other side there, so.
Yes, and so that one will be coming back, whether we want to have tiny houses that are used as rentals, that would be as if they were a motel, is what we will be considering, something we've not heard before. LAFCO, it was last week, and we learned that they will be definitely going through their sphere of influence for Atascadero. I put in that we would like to have that slow down a bit so that we could have some impact and input into how that shakes out, whether we stay with our current city boundaries and or we look down the road and we see that there are areas that we may want to annex or have an expansion for and what those uses might be and whether we have the resources for it as well. There's also legislation that came from the state that could require the city of Atascadero and other cities throughout the state to serve disadvantaged developments that are outside our city boundary that are having problems not only with water services but with septic services that would need to be on sewer. So any information that comes to us, I will bring back. Thank you.
Thank you. And as two of my other colleagues have mentioned, I had the great privilege of being at the League of California Cities training for new council members and mayors. It was very constructive, and I got a good perspective on this role and how we relate with the city staff, and appreciate the opportunity and the investment of our taxpayers to ensure that those of us who are serving you can do so effectively and with grace. Two other items, just as a reminder to the public, as we heard to the public, as we heard in our opening public comments, the city's annual strategic planning session is this Friday and Saturday. Friday night starting at 5:30 p.m., Saturday starting at 8:30 a.m., and the public is not only welcome but highly encouraged to be there and be part of the goal-setting process. This is our chance to speak freely as a council with each other and with staff on a wide-ranging set of issues so that we can develop our common vision and the focus and priorities and give staff guidance for moving forward effectively in public services. So I do encourage members to attend, and also wanted to point out and emphasize that we will have an opportunity on Saturday during the session for breakout sessions that will be involve council members and staff and the public members who are in attendance. So show up and make your voice heard. Lastly, for the public and members of the council, I think many of us on the council received an update from Orlando Gallegos regarding the warming center for our homeless individuals who are not eligible or willing or can't be accommodated at ECHO. And in inclement weather, that is open. They have stayed continuously open and have now moved to their new location at Dove Creek Church. And with transportation being provided by Ride On, and with volunteers supplementing the Ride On transportation of individuals to carry bicycles and carts and stuff, so that those of our homeless individuals who have things to carry with them can get in out of the inclement weather and get in off the streets. That seems to be going very well, and I thank all the volunteers and donors who make that possible.
Thank you. And I just do want to note, for those of you who are unable to make, any of these meetings for that matter, but strategic planning, I know that that can be a long haul. Come for an hour, come for 2 hours. Feel free to email us any of your comments or concerns that you would like to be brought up if you're unable to make it. So definitely the public is encouraged. We want your input because, as I said in the beginning, we're all in this together. So let's do it together. And now, do we have any individual determinations or actions from any of our department heads? No? All right. We will adjourn the meeting to the Public Financing Authority. And so now I will call to order the Public Financing Authority. Roll call, please.
Board Member Fonzie?
Here.
Board Member Funk?
Here.
Board Member Newsom?
Here.
Vice Chair Bobo?
Here.
And Chair Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Question before we vote on this one. I noticed in going through the draft minutes, we have a chairperson and a vice chairperson, and they're stated as being O'Malley, and I wondered if we need to have an election or we just roll right into those positions based on mayor and mayor pro tem.
It's a roll right into it based on mayor and mayor pro tem.
Okay, very good. Then I think we can go forward with the vote on the agenda.
Do we have a second? Is that, yeah, okay, so motion by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Sorry, Board Member Funk?
Yes.
Board Member Fonzie?
Yes.
Board Member Newsom?
Yes.
Chair Borbeau?
Yes.
And Vice Chair Borbeau, sorry, and Chair Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
All righty. And now is our time for community forum. Community forum is reserved for persons wanting to address the public financing authority on anything that is not on our agenda tonight, but that is under the purview of the authority. If you'd like to step forward, you have 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name. And I'm getting shaking of a head. And yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. Thank you for being here, though, public. We appreciate that. So any board announcements and reports? Nope. All right. We have a consent calendar. Any member of the board wishing to pull an item on the consent calendar? Any member of the public? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Fonzie, second by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau. Roll call, please.
Board Member Fonzie?
Yes.
Board Member Funk?
Yes.
Board Member Newsom?
Yes.
Vice Chair Borbeau?
Yes.
And Chair Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
All right. Now adjourned.